Tenacious Living Radio.
Welcome to Your Family Matters. Your host, Cindy Morin, is a family law lawyer with Resolve Legal Group, a family law firm dedicated to client-centered, holistic legal services. This radio program will bring you expert information about family law issues and various dispute resolution practices and other services concerning the law and how it relates to your family. Because your family matters. And now, here's your host, Cindy Morin.
Good afternoon and welcome to Tenacious Living's radio talk show, Your Family Matters. My name is Cindy Morin and I'm a family law lawyer with Resolve Legal Group. Today we have two special guests with us, Tracy and Anna, both of who have recently been through a divorce or separation and who have come to speak to us today to give us the female perspective about their experiences through their own separation. Last week we spoke to a couple of men about their experience on our He Said forum, and this is now part two of our forum, She Said. So I want to thank you for coming in today and sharing some very personal information with us.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So the purpose of today's show is to reach out and let those who might be going through their own separation or divorce an idea of what they might expect to happen and perhaps learn some insight about what to do and what not to do. So with that, I'd like to ask you ladies a few questions, and I guess I'll start with Anna to give her answers to my question, and then Tracy, you, and any insight you can share would be great. So firstly, no one ever goes into a marriage anticipating that it will one day end, but when it does, more often than not, there's one party who initiates it for whatever the reason. So my question to you is, emotionally speaking, do you think it makes a difference being the person in the relationship who ended it versus someone who was told it was going to end? What do you think, Anna?
Well, my feeling about this is if you've done everything that you could do to save that relationship, then you're going to probably be carrying a lot of the emotional part of it. But I think you'd be more stable because you have thought it over, you've looked at it, you've done everything you could, so it's emotional, but it's under control.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, whereas the other person, it all depends on what two people did in the relationship, I think, to resolve it as much as they could.
So what do you mean by that? What do you mean by what they did in terms of, did they both put in enough effort?
Yeah. I mean, if somebody ends the relationship just because their needs aren't getting met, but they haven't really done anything to do anything about getting that or saving that relationship or going to counseling or doing anything like that, then I think that's an escape from any emotion.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I see it anyway. You know.
Okay. And how about you, Tracy?
I think it must be a really different experience being the one to end the relationship versus being the one who has the relationship taken away from them. In my marriage, I was the one who pulled the plug, so to speak. We had been through counseling many times and it just wasn't going to work. I know he wanted to continue to work on the relationship, but I was at a point where I couldn't anymore. I think it was hard for him having, you know, that taken away from him. But it was really hard on my side too, because I was the one who had to be the bad guy. And I had to deal with all of the emotions of my kids and in many ways the censure of my family and friends who didn't always necessarily understand the reasons why I wanted to end the marriage. It's been very difficult with my family, particularly my father and my brother, who really liked my husband and wanted us to stay together.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I know even when clients come into my office, depending on where they're at, if they're the person who initiated the divorce, oftentimes they're done. By the time they come to see me, they're done, they're ready to move on. But the person who has had the relationship taken away from them, as you would describe, Tracy, they're usually the people who are struggling emotionally because they're a few steps behind the one that's already come in to see me to initiate it. And oftentimes on family files, what I find is depending on which person you're representing, where they're at in their emotional grief phase, I guess, is a way to describe it, would depend on how slow or how quickly I go through their divorce matter. Because sometimes people need that little bit of emotional catch-up to get them to a place where they're able to make good financial decisions and legal decisions about their matter. So even from a lawyer's perspective, I can tell you that I do see that. But I also can appreciate what you're saying, Anna. People, I think, who go in and have done everything that they can do, kind of come to a point where they resign themselves to the fact that there's nothing more that they can do. And then that's more of kind of an acceptance, and they're ready to move on from there. Mm-hmm. So thanks for that. I'm going to throw this question out there. For those of you who chose to end things, and I know, Tracy, you already said that you would identify with that one. When you decided to end the relationship and announce that to your partner, how were you feeling at the time? Like, you did mention already that you kind of felt like you had to be the bad guy, but any other insight you can give us with that?
It took me a really long time to get to the point of actually saying it. And I felt like I was done for a really long time. It was actually a trip that I took by myself just to think and reflect and decide my path that had to happen before I could actually do that. So I went on a trip on my own, basically sat on a beach and stared at my feet for a week and decided what to do. And when I came back, we sat down and had the difficult conversation. It was really scary because I did not know how he would respond. I think one mistake I made was that I tried to ease him into it. I tried to make it easier for him rather than just saying, we're done. I said, we need to split up and work on this separately. And I regret that because it kind of led him along. And when he realized it really was over, he was very angry. And it actually made things a lot worse. So going back now, I wish I had been more upfront and not so afraid of his reaction at the beginning.
Do you think if you had been more direct and not trying to hedge the issue, that he would have been able to accept things sooner?
No, I don't know how it would have gone. I can't say looking back. I think I was afraid of his anger, that he would be very unkind to me and the kids and take financial retribution, which ended up happening anyway, and I think probably even a little bit worse because he was more angry.
Okay. How about you, Anna? Like, do you mind me asking you if you were the one who decided
yes.
to end?
So, yes, I was.
So how were you feeling at the time when you let your partner know?
I was a little terrified. But at that point, I knew that I would be the only one that would do it. I kind of had to be the adult in the relationship. And at the time, it's a good thing that I did it because at that point, I didn't know that there was infidelity involved until much later. Mm. So he was kind of playing a little game with me. It was better if I made the decision, which had been a big, large part of the marriage anyway, as I was always doing that anyway. So, but I was a little worried about what he would do because he had been abusive on a couple of occasions before that. And he'd already been unkind to my children and I for a long time before that. So
it sounds like your situation was somewhat different in that there was some
Yeah,
level
it was
of
very psychological
yeah.
in my case. So yeah, that was a tough one because I just, like for instance, when I said, I'm going to divorce you, and he looked at me and said, you can't do that. and then of course I went, well, yeah, yes I can.
Yeah.
So yeah, there was a little mind game going on all the time. So I knew it was just that what's done is done. I just, that's it.
So yeah. Had you mentioned that there was some physical stuff that had gone on in your relationship. Was that kind of a pattern, or did that kind of escalate toward the end? Or
well, how? There'd been a couple of incidents a few years before, and then he just kind of ignored me and the kids for a long time. And then pretty close towards the end, he was getting really verbally abusive and threatening. And so I actually did make a threat to the police department at that point.
Yeah.
And I think by that point, because he knew that, and then when I said, I'm divorcing you, there wasn't a whole lot more he could do.
Do you mind me, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but do you mind me asking each of you how long each of your marriages were?
23 years.
Wow.
This was my second marriage, so it was 7 years. So
wow.
Relatively short, but fairly verbally and psychologically abusive, almost from the very beginning.
Wow.
Yeah. I'd have to say the same.
Yeah. It was great while we dated, but as soon as he knew he had me, the veil slipped down, and then I started to see what he was really like.
So, I hear you saying, you know, you stayed in your relationship for 7 years and you, Anna, for 23, and I'm not passing judgment on you at all, but if you saw that after you got married this was happening, what kind of kept you in the marriage, do you think?
Probably the way that I'd been brought up, that you have to try, and that's what marriage is about, is trying, and it's being patient. And in my situation, he had some childhood abuse, so that was something I was a caregiver, I was a nurturer, I understood it. And in fact, that's one of the things that I blamed his weird behavior on a lot of the time was, you know, he had some attention issues, he was a very hard worker, he'd had an abusive childhood. It didn't even occur to me that he might be unfaithful. All that time, I was looking at all the other stuff, and then in the end, I just recently found this out not that long ago after the divorce. Mm-hmm. So I went, oh, ding. So, yeah, but I mean, I had lots of red flags, lots of times where I'm like, this just isn't right. And again, the huge part of my intuition, I was ignoring my intuition, but that's something that I did in a lot of personal work later on, was get in touch with my intuition, my needs, my wants, not always putting that other person ahead of me. So
right. And how about you, Tracy?
I think that marriages kind of end one of two ways, either catastrophically or death by inches. My first marriage ended catastrophically when I made, like Anna, some discoveries about his extracurricular activities. Ending that marriage was almost easier because I could see that there was one great big thing, and that was the justification for leaving, because there was no staying. My second marriage, I say, was death by inches, because it was very insipid, little bit by little bit, chipping away at me. And at first you don't see the pattern, and you make excuses for the pattern, and you feel like, if I just try harder, if I can just get him to understand. Plus, for me, it was a second marriage. You really don't want to fail twice, you know. And after the first one, you meet the second husband and you're very excited. You tell all your family and friends, yeah, I got it right this time. This is a great guy. And then it turns out it's not so. Feeling like a failure twice is very embarrassing. It's very, very hard to live with the idea that your marriage failed a second time.
So thank you for being so open and sharing that. I want to ask both of you, now that you're separated and apart from your prior spouses, would you say that you're in the same place emotionally that you were in when your divorce and separation first happened? Or are you in a better place? Or how different, if at all, does it feel now compared to when you first separated? Like, what, if you can kind of describe the then and now experience, and maybe also share with our listeners how long it has been since you've been separated. And I'm going to start with you on that, Anna.
Okay. It's been 5 years since, 4 years, pardon me, since I've been divorced, 5 years since I was separated. I'm in a whole different place now. I'm zero tolerance for anything that I don't want or is not good for me. At the time, I was just teetering on the edge. It was keeping that courage to get through this, but at the same time feeling like I was going to crash a lot of the time. So I had to live in the same house with him for 8 months before he left. before I could get him out. So, and then there was the whole process of the agreement that had to be done in that time. He didn't want anything to do with it. He just left it all up to me. So I had to sit down every week with him and go through it and listen to him part my hair and be abusive and tell me, oh, you didn't say this last time and what's this all about. So yeah, so I was just running on autopilot for those 8 months. And then when he was out, it was this huge sense of relief, huge adrenaline burst. And that lasted for a couple of years. And then things that I hadn't dealt with because I was on autopilot and dealing with the kids and that's when all the processing started. So that was kind of tough. I mean, because it was even physically debilitating in a way. Yeah, mm-hmm. It just, wasn't thinking in those terms, but my body had to process it all as well, what I'd been through and walking eggshells for so long. And I mean, he hadn't been physically abusive throughout the marriage. He was loud and threatening and a bit of a screamer, but there was still that fear. I was always on the edge of his personality, I think is what it was. Yeah. Yeah, so now it's so different now. I've done a lot of personal work. And I know what my part was in the marriage as well, what I put up with, what I allowed to happen, not setting boundaries for myself. Yeah, so yeah, I'm in a much, much better place now. But there was that period that I had to process everything, including finding out that he had some extracurricular activities probably all along, but I had no idea.
No idea. It's interesting that you mention that you've had to process things and develop boundaries for yourself. I think there's a lot that goes on with establishing boundaries in relationships and whatnot. And in fact, that's a topic for another day that I'm hoping to introduce on the show is just a whole discussion about boundaries and what they look like and what they mean. But Tracy, how about you?
At the time when my husband moved out, I felt tremendous relief. It was like a weight was lifted off my shoulders. The year since we separated has been a bit of a roller coaster, up and down, questioning whether I'd made the right decision, wondering what my future would be. And at this point, you know, we're in the negotiation process of dividing up all the property. And now I'm starting to feel eager to have this finished and to move on with things. I'm excited about the future now. And like Anna, I've spent a lot of time analyzing my part and thinking about ways that I can improve myself, that if I ever, God forbid, get into another marriage, I don't make the same mistakes again.
Good. Okay. What kind of supports did both of you draw upon during your separation and divorce to help you get through this? Or did you kind of go it as a lone wolf? What was that like for you, Anna?
Well, when I first decided that I was going to file, my siblings and I we're functional, but we're not super close. So my sister was power of attorney for my mother at that point, who was out of it. She was not cognizant of anybody around her, and she was going to pass away soon. So I had asked my sister if I could have some of my inheritance to do the retainer for the lawyer, and that was difficult right off the bat, because right away she says, well, it's not like he's hitting you or anything. So that's kind of how things started out with my family. And even since then, I've never really had the support of my family at all. They're all very weird about it, and they're still weird about it. No, I wasn't allowed to talk about it when we got together. They just didn't want to hear about it. So she did do that for me, which I am grateful for. I'd have to say I have two married couples and my friends that have been very supportive, and I have a fair number of divorced friends, and that seems to be growing. And my kids and I, because things had been kind of divisive with their father. He played favorites, and so they were kind of scattered. So I made a big point of all of us going to counseling and saying, we have to be a team here. And they knew, like, that was one thing that they knew. They were on my page because they knew Dad wasn't right, something wasn't right with him. They accept what they can get, but they're very matter-of-fact about it. They know the way that he is. So they know what it's been like for me, and they've been very supportive. So,
So you mentioned that you went to counseling. Was that worthwhile to go through counseling?
Absolutely. I voluntarily put myself through Sheriff King for the 14-week program, because just to figure out what the heck went on. Because at that point I was so confused about what had been going on in this marriage, because it was very, very psychological. And it just kind of undermined my self-confidence. I didn't know what was happening one day to the next, walking eggshells around this person. And it was really, really important for me to put my two boys in their respective programs as well, just so they would know what a normal relationship is supposed to look like.
And just so our listeners are aware, the Sheriff King program is a program geared around domestic violence and abuse. And it's not just for women, it's also for men.
Yes.
And it's a fantastic program.
Yeah,
and
sure
you mentioned
is.
That they have programs for kids as well?
Yep, they have ones for smaller kids. They have ones for teens. I think at the time it was kind of like an art therapy thing for the teens, because teens don't often want to talk about things.
Right.
And there was also one just for the parents as well. And, you know, there were both parents there in some of those sessions as well. One who had been the abuser, trying to get a handle on what was going on here and the dynamics going on and what caused them. And
well, that's interesting. So you learn something new every day, because I was aware that Sheriff King had the men's and women's groups. I didn't know that they had something for kids, because
a lot of support groups.
Yeah, that's good. I know that Calgary Counseling Centre also has men and women's groups, both for abusers and people who have been abused, and they also have children's programs. So it's good to know that there's that extra resource. Tracy, what about you? What kind of supports did you rely on?
I've had tremendous support from my friends, particularly my women friends. You know you're in a bad place in a marriage when friends and, you know, family are telling you this is really bad for you and you need to think about whether you belong in this marriage or not. So those friends have been the most supportive, phoning, sending text messages, checking in on me regularly. I have gone for some counseling. I've found that quite helpful. I think the biggest support I've had is from my two teenage daughters. At first, they were upset about the idea of my husband and I splitting up, but they also saw what was going on in the home, and he was very hard on them too, which was very stressful. So once, things had settled down from the initial upheaval of him moving out, it became such a peaceful home that the kids really, really appreciated the difference. And we have become closer than ever. And we ask each other all the time, how are you doing? It's really funny when your 14-year-old daughter comes up and puts her arm around you and goes, how are you doing today, Mom? That's pretty amazing. So
it's amazing for any teenager to even talk to their parents. So that's
I think we're closer than ever.
Well, that's good.
That's one good thing that's come out of it.
So with that, you both have mentioned your children of the relationship, and what is their relationship like with their father since the separation and divorce?
Mm-hmm. Well, my older one, he's a very matter-of-fact kind of a guy, so his father has a construction company. He's worked with his dad, so that was their way of sort of getting back into a relationship again on that level. And my son knows that that's all his father can handle, is that kind of a thing going on, the guys at work. My younger one, I think he was 12, when his father moved out. And he had the hardest time because, you know, not having mom and dad together, he still had that little vision in his head that that's the way things were supposed to be. But so over time, I let him vent because I understood what he was going through. So I let him have his vent and then he'd feel better. And he did appreciate the counseling sessions as well. He had every Sunday with his dad. That's when he would see his dad. So they would go do something. He still, to this day, doesn't want to stay at his father's house, so he's not comfortable with that, but he enjoys their get-togethers, and he's very matter-of-fact about it now, too. He takes it what he can get, and he's happy with that, and I'm lucky I have kids who are very, very clear-seen. You know, they see it for what it is, and my daughter, on the other hand, she hasn't talked to her father in 5 years, and absolutely refuses to, And luckily for her, I mean, he's still hanging in there, and he's been generous with her, but, I think she really took it to heart much earlier than anybody else did. She saw the dynamics going on between the two of us, probably maybe because she was a girl, and how he was treating me and the disrespect and the contemptuousness. And I actually, all of us, I think, thought of her as kind of a difficult kid, not knowing at the time that she was already tuned into this atmosphere and nobody else was really getting it like she was, yeah.
It's amazing how much kids pick up and how attuned they are. How about you, Tracy?
My children are from my first marriage, and they were 6 and 4 when their dad and I split up. There have been bumps in the road along the way. They live with me full-time now that they're teenagers, but they still see their dad a couple of times a week, and they have a good relationship with him. When my current husband and I split up, the girls really wanted to maintain a relationship with their stepdad, but he was the one who pulled away from them. When we first split up, he said, "I'll always be there. Things aren't going to change. I still love you." And as time passed, he pulled away, and they were very confused by that and exceptionally hurt. So it's been a bad experience for them, and they're simply accepting now that he isn't going to have a place in their lives, and they're dealing with it. It's going to be a process for them to get through all of this.
So now that you've both been through this process, what kind of advice would you give someone who's just decided to become separated or divorced? And essentially, what is your hindsight 2020 perspective on the entire process? What would you say, Anne?
Well, my first thing would be is, have you really given it everything you can give it? As long as there are two reasonable people involved, counseling, just make that effort, try and make that effort together. If you can't make it together and it's just one-sided, there's no good time, as far as I'm concerned. People are, "Oh, I'll wait," and maybe when the kids are older. There is no good time. If it's a really bad relationship, it's hurting everybody, and just do it. My biggest thing would be, do some homework. Go see a lawyer, go find out, talk to other people. Yeah, do your homework and get your information first, and then you will feel more empowered to move forward and to make a move.
Yeah. And how about you, Tracy?
I would agree. Get your ducks in a row. Talk to a lawyer, a financial planner, a counselor. Figure out the best way of preparing yourself for it. If you're the one who's leaving, you want to make sure you do it in an honest way, not a hurtful way, but one that enables you to keep your dignity and your self-respect and allows the other person to do the same. And it's not going to be easy. It really won't be. It will be one of the hardest things you ever go through in your life, but you'll get through it. And if the marriage was truly bad, it will be better on the other side.
Thanks for that. With respect to when you first decide to get a divorce or separation, the cost involved is astronomical at times, especially when you have somebody who's more difficult on the other side. Is it worth it at the get-go when you're first going into the divorce process? Would you say it's worth it to also invest some extra dollars, despite how tight money is, to get some counseling?
I'd say absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things out there that are available. They don't always have to be astronomical. I've found that people are very generous in terms of helping you out on that level. So.
And what about you, Tracy?
I think if you can get your soon-to-be ex-partner on board, I know there are counselors who do divorce counseling, so that you can sit down together with an impartial third party to help you to work through some of the emotional issues that go along with it, in hopes that that will lessen your trauma going forward emotionally, but also financially. If you can get on the same page through a counselor, the legal process will probably be less expensive because it will be less acrimonious.
Right. Do you find that, I've heard that both of you had retained lawyers. Do you find that a lot of the legal process, a lot of the legal fees that you spend is taken up by dealing with people's emotions?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The writing of letters back and forth gets very costly, and especially if it's dealing with very simple matters that really shouldn't even be there.
That are just emotionally charged.
Yeah.
How about you, Anne?
A little different on my side of things. All he really cared about was the assets, the house, the this, the that. So he wanted, and he knew I was good at it because I'd been handling his paperwork my whole life. So he just said, can you just do it all?
Okay.
So I did, and so I saved a lot of money doing that. And I was lucky; I had a lawyer who, as soon as you got into a lot of the, I don't want to charge you any more money than I have to. Let's stop right here. She was very good that way, and I appreciate that.
So I'm glad you brought that up, Anna, about you know, that your lawyer was really good at kind of sticking to what was worth spending money on versus what wasn't worth spending money on, and. In light of that, what would each of you say is important for people to look for when they go to seek out a family lawyer? I'm assuming that that trait would be important, but what other insight would you give them with respect to seeking out a family lawyer?
I think a lawyer who will be forthright with you about what to expect. And I think that's really the lawyer's job, is to manage expectations. You're a little bit at the mercy of your partner's lawyer, because if they don't manage their client's expectations, it really can become a back and forth. So if they're leading them to believe that things are going to happen that won't, or they just keep writing letters back and forth with your lawyer saying, well, we're not going to do that, it really can up your costs. So you're a little bit at the mercy of their lawyer as well as your own.
The biggest thing was that the kids were first and foremost in her mind, what's going to happen with your children. Your children should be able to stay in their own home, and she helped me with that as much as she could. And I was lucky that she told me about taking my spousal as a lump sum that allowed me to keep my house rather than getting alimony. So that was huge. She happens to be more into a social worker, so she was well versed in what goes on with kids and their reactions to things and how they can feel, you know, very lost and disoriented in the whole process.
So to recap, if I just summarize what both of you are saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're saying it's important to find a lawyer who manages expectations, is forthright, and tells you what it is that is about to happen as opposed to what you want to hear. You're suggesting that it's also important to use a lawyer that can manage a file such that they can assess risks that might be coming from the other side if the other side's file is not being managed appropriately, and a lawyer who also takes a look at the entire family unit, not just you as a client, but also takes a look at and explains the considerations of the impact that your choice of action might have on your entire family, in particular children, if children are involved. Would that about be a correct summary of everything?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
And I think it's also important to note that from my perspective as a family lawyer, if a client is getting those additional additional assistance, such as counseling, so that they can manage their own emotions, that certainly helps a file come to conclusion, because
Absolutely.
Then by the time you go see your lawyer, it's very businesslike, and we can deal with the legal matters as opposed to the emotional component, without ignoring the emotional component, because that is a very real thing in family law. So, any final thoughts before we end today? Tracy?
Just keep your head up, keep your head about you, and realize that it will be better on the other side.
Thanks.
Yeah. It's definitely going to get better. Just hang in there and just believe in yourself, and don't settle for anything less than what you need.
Okay. Well, I want to thank our brave guests for coming in today and being a part of our show. And thank you so much for sharing your stories. I know that's not easy to relive some of this stuff, and you're both so very open and honest with everything, and I really appreciate that. If you want to find out more about our radio show topics or more about our firm, Resolve Legal Group, please visit our website at www.resolvelegalgroup.com or by calling 1-866-RESOLVE. And please be sure to tune in next week when we'll be speaking to psychologist April Byers and mediation and communications coach Andrea LaRochelle about effective communication strategies with your former partner through your separation and/or divorce, and how to have those hard conversations with minimal conflict. That's going to be our topic for next week. Thanks for joining us.
Your Family Matters is sponsored by Resolve Legal Group, a family law firm dedicated to client-centered holistic legal services, with offices located downtown Calgary and downtown Cochrane, Alberta. The unique delivery of client-centered holistic services that Resolve Legal Group has become known for is structured to address not only a client's legal matter, but this model also ensures that families are bridged with differing community supports based on an individual's and family needs. It is the firm's philosophy that with the right supports in place, clients become empowered to make sound legal decisions when files are led to resolution. It is the firm's desire to continue to grow and expand this model so that holistic practice becomes the norm in family law rather than the exception. Contact us at 403-229-2365 or visit www.resolvelegalgroup.com for more information.